Okay, so what did you do after Seattle? Oh, wait, in Seattle, so was this like a movie that was going on kind of parallel to what was going on in LA?
No, this was a, this was a doctor who was getting referrals from all over the country, all over the world, because abortion was in demand and all from all over the world, certainly in the United States, and most of the states in the United States it was illegal. And he was a prime mover to get the abortion issue on the ballot in Washington. And the people voted to get rid of their restrictive abortion law. So abortion became legal in Seattle. And it was written in such a way that lay people, technicians, paramedics, could do abortions. And so he opened up a clinic. He had a clinic before. Mm-hmm. And in fact, he got arrested for doing abortions. But his goal, and he had a political goal, which was to raise the money to put a referendum on the ballot on abortion. And it was a very successful move. But so he was running a for-profit.
And down here, it was more self-help movement.
Down here, it was women's liberation groups in throughout, well, it was throughout the throughout California, and certainly Los Angeles was a major area for women's liberation because it was a very big city. I'm going to turn that off for just a minute. I want to ask a question. So what you're asking about is my involvement with the self-help movement, right? Okay. I continue to be part of the self-help group, which Carol was the prime mover, and we did all pretty much everything out of Los Angeles. We worked out of the Women's Center on Crenshaw Boulevard for the spring and the summer of 71, working with any women who wanted to come in the door, anybody who had any interest at all in their bodies and control of their bodies. We, if any information that we were learning, we were just wide open to share with people coming in the door. And at one point, we finally got one room that was all ours, and we could share self-examination, and which we did. I mean, anyone who came in, we had speculum, and one of us would get up on the table and show her how.
What was that like? What was the feeling like?
Very exciting time. Very exciting. I mean, the women who came heard by word of mouth what we were doing. And a lot of the women came because they were concerned about their own health. A lot of women came because they were concerned about pregnancy. And they didn't want to go back to their doctors, or they didn't have any money, or both. Mm-hmm. And we figured out how we could get the two-minute urine pregnancy test and into the Women's Center. And we made them available, and we learned how to do them. And we showed women how to use the test to test their own urine in a self-help way. So here we had women coming in to see if they were pregnant or not. And it was just a lot of information sharing on a very self-help level. We used the Canadian little paperback books. They weren't books. They were little magazines called, I don't remember the name of it anymore. They're very popular. They were given away. And they were wonderful for self-helpish kind of information sharing on health and birth control. Birth Control Handbook, it was called. Birth Control Handbook out of Canada. And we managed to order a bunch of those. And I think we used Women's Center funds, or maybe we used our own funds, and we just gave them away. And I don't even remember how we were able to get money for the few things that we were able to buy. Maybe we. I mean, women didn't give us any money because we could. They might have asked for donations, but I just don't even remember. Probably came out of our own pockets, as usual, with grassroots organizations. By the summer of during the spring and into the early summer, there were so many women's groups in the LA Basin that word got around, and we were being invited all over the place to bring self-help. The L.A. Basin had 90 women's, what we called at that time, cell groups. Mm-hmm. Women's groups that met regularly once a week, mm-hmm. or the other week. They called themselves Women's Liberation, called themselves political activists. Women only. That's a lot of women. Organized to do different things. And so we connected up with a lot of women, a lot of women in groups, sharing stuff.
How much
of
your time were you spending on this, like, during the year?
By then, I was traveling into Los Angeles and back to Fullerton at night. And in the beginning, for the initial meetings in early 1971, I went one night a week. And I went for about 2 months, month and a half. And then we decided to work together as a group, and the group split. One group remained at the bookstore, and another one went over to the Women's Center. I went with Carol to the Women's Center, and I went in maybe, it was either twice a week or three times a week, and at some point I was going in every day. I drove in by myself and I came back.
And what did you do the rest of the week here?
I deserted my family. I literally deserted my family. They were all in school except for the youngest. And Al pretty much stepped in. And Al's mother stepped in. By summer, I know it was every day. I know it was every day. And I just didn't, I mean, I was really flying. I mean, I was into something that was revolutionary and was meaningful in women's lives, meaningful in my life. And at that time, we knew we were onto something that was going to change the world. In our lifetime, we knew. And it just, you know, the whole momentum of it just took us. It took me.
Mm-hmm.
And so as far as my family, they were pretty much on their own. I mean, when I was home, I was here. And when I wasn't here, it wasn't even on my mind what was happening here.
And you had, like, did you discuss things ever with Al and Elsa?
No.
It just happened.
I just did it. I mean, if it was anything at all, I told Al, I'm going to Los Angeles again today. He knew that I was involved with, you know, the abortion issue, wanting to get the laws changed. And he also knew some basic information about the self-help activities that I was doing. And he also knew about menstrual extraction because he helped me get the kids together. But otherwise, I didn't share anything that I was doing. But he knew that things were happening. And he was very supportive. I mean, he in fact, at one point he said he was really glad that I had found something that was taking so much of my energy and so much of my time, because that left him free to be primary provider and primary care person for the kids, because he really liked being with the kids. And I wasn't around to interfere with how he did it. I remember that. I remember you saying that. It was great.
And how was your relationship with the kids?
Very rocky. It was not good. The kids could not understand. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that they were so dependent on me. It's that they, when I just wasn't there. And my not being there shook the hell out of them. And when I came back, it was, you have to have a certain amount of time to kind of reorient yourself in relationships. And I wasn't, from then on until the late 1970s, I wasn't home on a long enough period for us to all readjust again. But like, you need 2 days straight. I never had 2 days straight. I had to get
my... Was it different with the girls and boys? Was it older and younger? Do you remember anything
else? I think that because Murray was pretty much on his own, he's the oldest and fairly self-sufficient. I think if it bothered him at all, he never really showed it. He and I were very close because he's my first. And he would come to me and talk to me about things always. In fact, sometimes he still does. Very personal things. So I'm not sure that it was too traumatic for him. Life pretty much went on for him. The second boy was a little harder. because he was at an age where I could have been more active in scouting for him, for example. I could have taken more active role in his schooling, and I wasn't there. With the girl, it was difficult because she and at that time especially, she and I were totally different people, totally. And we were lock horns. And I just went from bad to worse. And the closer she got to teenage, the worse it got. By the time she was 11, it was just fire and water. And nothing I did was right. She always turned to her dad. I'm glad he was there for her to center, and that she was satisfied with whatever it was he provided. And it wasn't until she was 16, 17, that she began to realize who she was more in relationship to me. And it was when we began to get closer. And from then on, it was very positive. Until she and I are very, very close today. Even though we are totally different, she and I are very close today. The teenage years were very, very difficult. I don't think that it was any different in the relationship, in her relationship with me, than any other mother and daughter. I think that this is a very, very common thing between mothers and daughters. And I think it's part and parcel of the society. Mothers lose power as children get older.
Did she ever express feelings about you going away, like being in the
movement?
Yeah.
Was she
aware of what?
She did not like my being gone. She was very vocal. And she didn't have any idea what I was doing. She didn't like whatever it was I was doing. She didn't like, even though she didn't know what it was. And Al and I always portrayed it as, I'm going to work. And a lot of times I'd come home and I'd be exhausted and irritable and impossible. And they locked up.
When she was older, I'm just wondering if she ever connected with that you were in the women's movement.
Yeah. When she was early teenage, later turned teenage, rather. See, by then she'd begun to date guys. And she'd begun skipping a lot of classes. She was into drugs. And both she and Kenneth began cutting classes. Kenneth finally dropped out. Teresa dropped out also. Teresa was into drugs. Kenneth wasn't into drugs, but Teresa was. Teresa was into boys. And I felt crazy. And there just was no opportunity nor any desire on her part to even want to talk about it. What she was doing was her business and stay out of it. And you don't know anything anyway. And when she was 16, 17, infections, vaginal infections, pregnancy. Bingo! I'm running an abortion clinic. Welcome. Oh, this is what you do. And so it was because of her own personal needs that the connection was made. And she came into the clinic. She had some experiences at Kaiser where they treated her very, very badly and where people are treated very badly. Like, you know, pieces of meat, especially teenagers, especially women. She came into the clinic and everybody was super nice. Super, super nice. And she eventually came to work at the clinic.
Shortly after that?
Shortly after that, yeah.
How did you feel with being at work and having your daughter coming in for an abortion?
Great. It just told me why I was doing it. I mean, that was the whole purpose. I mean, one of the major reasons why. One of the doctors. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was great. You know, once things become a matter of how it affects your own personal life, then connections are made. And like I say, from then on, the relationship has been nothing but to the good.
You can talk about everything.
Everything, yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are things that she doesn't want to talk to me about because there are things I don't want to talk to her about. Mm-hmm. But in general, no, it's really good. It's supportive. And sometimes we fight, and that's good, too. And the air is usually cleared over the fighting. But on the very personal issues of what we deal with as women, she's very, very close. She really does. She really finally matured to really understand and accept me and have respect for me, and I have respect for her. Our relationship is really good. It's really good relationship. The fourth one, came a little bit later, and she went into preschool. She went to an open school, and which was extremely good. The two feminists school teachers pulled their kids out of Fullerton Public School because they didn't like the school system. They started their own, which was funded by the Fullerton school system. And they got 3 rooms over at an abandoned or at a condemned school, which was perfectly functional. It was condemned because it was Central City. It was the only way that they could integrate the Mexican kids, Mexican-American kids. So they closed the school down. They got 3 rooms over at that school. And it's a community school. We call it community open school. And it's parent-teacher involvement. Mm-hmm. Except that it stressed problem-solving. It didn't matter what grade the kid was supposed to be in. They learned at their own speed, at their own level. They learned if they wanted to. If they didn't want to learn, they didn't have to. And the learning materials were there. And the teachers were the parents. And Al had involvement there because I wasn't around. And, for example, Andrea could not read or write or do any math until she was sixth grade age. Nothing. Zilch. And me, as a teacher, was worried. I mean, you don't spend 5 years, 6 years, and not learn anything. I mean, how fast do you have to run to catch up? I was really worried. 6 year, she says, you know, next year, COS is going to let me take any class I want anywhere in the junior high school district in Fullerton. She was not held to any particular school by the time she got into junior high school age or high school age. She could choose the classes because COS had that arrangement. Or she could stay at COS and take the junior high school classes. And she said, there's some really good classes at some of these schools. But how can I take these classes if I can't read or write? Bingo! So, I mean, the school did exactly what it was supposed to do. And in that 1 year, she brought her reading up, certainly her writing, language arts skills, brought them up. And she worked on her math, and she was doing high school math. So, you know, the traditional tracking system of the public school system is, I mean, awful. Anyway, so she, from a very early age, she's a very capable person and has been from a very early age. She also came under my mother-in-law's wing. She spent a lot of time with my mother-in-law, and they are very, very close, which is really nice. And Al was involved with COS. And she was a student of COS all the way through elementary school, junior high school, where she took some classes at the different junior high schools and the rest of the classes or the rest of the whatever she wanted to do at COS. And her high school was pretty much the same except for the last year, the last 2 years, when she transferred over to the high school because by then she was a very, very good Bobby Sox softball player. Very good and loved it. And she wanted to join the Fullerton High School softball team. And in order to be a member, you have to be registered at the school. So she made the decision to switch over. She played on their winning team for a year or 2 years and went on to Fullerton College because she was on their softball team also, and which was a winning team, and has remained in that area. She went on to Cal State Fullerton, graduated Cal State Fullerton. She's had a variety of jobs through school. Physical therapist, sports trainer, very much interested in sports medicine. Right now she's working for Redondo High School as their trainer, athletic trainer. She's eventually planning on going back for her master's or PhD. We think she'll probably go PhD. Excuse me. I got something caught in my throat. Okay.
So, are your daughters feminists?
How do they define
themselves?
Teresa has a consciousness. She's not an active feminist. But she does have a consciousness. Yeah, turn it off. I'm going to give it more.
The rest of this interview is continued on page 3.